No one cares about you, Chris Pratt Jr. Like, yeah. I don't care if we ever learn your name. Like, you're boring. You're basic.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to Star Trek Discovery Recap Freakcast something or other. This is going to be a discussion on episode 4, which is called The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry, which is probably a reference that I don't understand.
Me either.
Oh, feel free to hit...
No, me either. And I did not have time to look it up.
So, yeah, so someone
somebody
tell
hit
us.
Me up. Somebody hit me up on Twitter and let me know what the hell that means, because I was fully expecting Captain Lorca to deliver that line at some point during the episode. And while I'm glad he didn't, I also could have used that help.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But, hey, guess what?
We're back.
Well, yes, that too, but guess what else?
What?
I did not hate this episode.
Me either. And
wow.
You know what? I spent like a good 5 minutes being like, oh man, it is my personal brand to bring just like salty crab cakes into each episode. And what am I going to do? Because I did not hate this episode. There's some stuff that I want to talk about, but I didn't hate it. And I was like, I feel good about the fact that I committed to keep watching this show.
All right, here's the thing, is I think that my bar has just dropped significantly.
That could be it.
And I also just got out of Blade Runner, which I also didn't love, even though everyone else loves it. So I'm just, like, in a whole world. I think that, like, it was all of the things were set up for me to, like, just lowered my expectations and whatever. So, like,
right.
But there are some things in here that I think are actually really good. And if the show continues to explore those things and those tensions, I think it'll go in a direction that I can live with. It doesn't mean I'm going to it, but we'll see.
Right. Well, what's going to be interesting is I want to find out what you found not shit in this episode.
Which versus what I saw
is not shit, because it would be great if they were entirely different things.
It would be great. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. But, okay, let's set it up real quick. So in the last episode, we found out that Lucius Malfoy wants to create an organic propulsion system. You know, we lamented that this was like the like almost jingoistic, like we are at war, everyone needs to do war things. And so we're leading into this episode with, okay, there's this technology that needs to be built. There's this monster that was captured, which is, which theoretically we would, you know, we kind of assumed at the end of the episode that it would be used in some way, like tested on and used as a weapon. So we're opening up with that nonsense. All right. So,
Speaking of Lucius Malfoy, did you love that Burnham got mail at the beginning of this episode and it was almost like a howler? Like Harry Potter, right?
Aww,
like it kept making noise, and I was like, shout out to Harry Potter. Not really, but
I went in loving it.
Yeah, I went in loving it.
And I have to say, like, as someone who doesn't give a shit about any of these characters, like, when that message popped up and said that it was, you know, the last will and testament of Michelle Yeoh's character, Georgia, I don't know anyone's
Georgio,
names.
Georgio, yep.
Georgio, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a problem for me.
That I don't remember anyone's names.
Not the fact that you don't know anyone's names, but when are we going to get to know who these fucking crew members are?
Oh, I was like, do you really care? Well, so when that popped up, I was like, and I actually felt an emotion about the show that wasn't like, which I appreciated because, like, you're like, oh, that's brutal. Like, no matter what is in this, which we're going to find out eventually, like, that's going to be really tough for her. And, so that set it up in a way where I was feeling a little bit, like, connected to her in some ways that was refreshing.
Mm-hmm. I almost hope we don't find out what's into it. I hope it's like a Pulp Fiction thing, like that Shining briefcase, and we never know what's in it. Leave us
they
with that
it
mystery.
At the end. Did you not watch the same episode I watched?
They opened it, but like, did we get to see what was in it? Did I turn my head away too quick? What was
it?
No
How are we doing a podcast and you missed like half the episode?
I raced to do the podcast. What was in it? Was it something good?
So it's actually really. So you heard the message though, right? Because she's
I heard the message.
You're like a daughter to me and all this stuff. And you're like,
blah, blah, blah.
It was gut wrenching, right? Because you're like, well, she obviously recorded this before the mutiny happened. So
in
Burnham's mind, she's like, do you still believe this stuff about me? Like, there'll always be doubt
right,
there.
Right.
Which, you know, gives her that torturedness that they're going for. But the message was like, I want you to continue discovering things and being curious.
Like, you're curious, you're an explorer, Yeah.
So it was.
So what was in the box?
I almost what's in the box?
What's in the box?
It was a telescope. It was, remember in the first episode, they had like, she had a telescope in her office or something. I don't know. There's a telescope somewhere. It's just an old school telescope. And, you know, it was cute.
Yo.
Yes.
I'm not even lying, Anita. I straight up watched this entire episode to the credits. How did I turn my head at precisely the moment where that was revealed, to the point where, like, I left thinking, like, oh, wow, we didn't get to see what was in there. And I loved it. Now my whole...
Well, now you think the episode's shit. Now that was the part that you liked.
Now I'm questioning everything. Oh, man. Somebody talk me through this. At Ebony Astor on Twitter. My world is wracked.
So you were probably taking notes about how, you know, emotional that whole exchange was, and you didn't see it. Whatever. I can't believe you missed that, though.
Me either. Wow.
In this episode, we, you know, we see more of the Klingons, and we see some of the tension. They're being, I'm going to use the word humanized a little bit, even though that doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean. But there's some shit in there that I just, before we, like, go into it, did you miss this part? Where,
oh man, I'm never gonna hear the end of this, and justifiably so.
You know I'm gonna forget this after we finish recording anyway, so.
Yeah, but Twitter won't.
Nah, it's good. I'm into it. So, I don't literally know none of the names of the Klingons, except, I don't know, so there's the two characters, there's the, like, the new leader dude, and then there's Vok. The woman sidekick.
Right.
So the woman sidekick says, she says, I saw your smile when you picked the meat from her smooth skull. Like, I lost my shit when I was like, oh, so you're basically like cannibals. Like, cool. Uh-huh. You're not coded as savages or anything. Like, no, we're totally off base in that fucking analysis. That shit.
Yo, the thing that drove me crazy was when she said, I don't want to be a leader. I just want to follow behind you,
dude,
and help you be better. That's, and like, I was like, whatever.
What?
Like, I can already tell you're smarter than him. You're probably a better strategist. You seem like you got your finger on the pulse with the rest of the crew on the ship of the House of Takuma. Like, whoever you are, whose name we can't remember,
absolutely
would be. Yeah, right? But also, there were so many moments where I thought, they're setting these two up to kiss, and I'm gonna
I know! Oh, I was just about to say that. Yeah.
I'm gonna fall off my couch. Like, Klingon romance, whatever. Unless it's like Next Generation style, you're fighting, you know, it's kind of like high theater. Like, unless someone's getting their ass kicked, I'm not into lovey-dovey Klingon romance. Not into it.
Well, and it pisses me off too, because you're like, why can't they just be, like, working together for the same cause?
Right.
Like, why does it have to be, like, this intimate thing? And again, they would not do that if it was a male, like, if it was the same gender, right?
If
those characters were the same gender. So, like, that shit just annoyed the crap out of me. And then, you know, at the end of the episode where Cole, who looks exactly like Kratos from God of War, like, I just couldn't get over the, like, the stripes on his, the red paint on his face and, like, skin tone and stuff, who comes over and, you know, basically takes over the ship. And and she's like, it was so transparent that she's like, I'm with you. And then you're like, okay, so they're going to do some shit. But there was some stuff that happened between them. You know, Cole says to the albino Klingon leader dude.
Vok.
He says, words don't win wars. Right. And so, like, I felt like that was very much in the mantra of the show. Right. Which we can come back to when we talk about Lucius and, like, his fucking warmongering bullshit. But, you know, like, they were clearly setting it up of, like, he's kind of going to come and take over and take, you know, he's taking advantage of the generosity and spirit of the leader.
A buck of, oh, man. You need cue cards.
Your audio cut out for me when you said his name. I do need cue cards. You should see my notes. Wait till we get to Commander Safety, because I don't know her name either.
Oh, man. We're the worst.
This
is absolutely the best prepared, best sound designed Star Trek podcast out there. I hope people realize what they're getting for free, you know? Like, you can't get this anywhere else, people.
Yeah, it's real special. So yeah, I thought that the stuff with the Klingons was interesting because it is creating, they're not like a hive mind. There are people who want to do different things. There are different philosophies, different like, you know, practices in terms of how they want to approach a thing. And I, you know, as much as I think this, the way that they are being framed, and we've talked extensively about this, is a huge problem. I appreciate at least this like a little tiny bit of direction of,
I appreciated the expansion of the Klingon kind of visuals and aesthetic and culture in this episode. So we spend more time on the Klingon ships, right? Which are like heavily organic, which I dug, you know, like the kind of sinuous lines. It looked almost as if the ship was grown rather than built, which I think is quite deliberate, right? You know, like, the dichotomy between the Starfleet ships and the Klingon ships could not be more stark in terms of like the colors, the red and oranges, you know, of the Klingon ships versus the like cool blues and greens and shiny chrome surfaces of the Federation ships. But I really appreciated that the Klingons that we see, that we talk to, like the way we're immersed on that Klingon ship in episode 4 makes you feel as if they're a real species and not quite so one dimensional.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And so one of the questions that I was asking throughout the episode was, I wonder if at any point there's going to be that deliberate switch such that the Klingons start speaking English. You know, like if they're ever going to move away from the subtitles, because I think it's a very deliberate choice to have everything subtitled with them. Right. But normally in situations like this, at some point there's a switch just because it's easier to have them speak English.
That.
Right. But I wonder if that's ever going to happen.
Yeah. So I was thinking about that this episode as well, too, because there was a lot to read. And I was, you know, like I had to actually rewind a couple of times because I felt like I was missing stuff. And usually, especially, you know, we talked about how conservative CBS is and these sorts of these networks hate subtitles because they believe that their audiences don't want to read them. And so it is a very interesting choice that they included subtitles. And I was trying to think back to like other Star Trek shows because usually you hear Klingon speaking in English. But do you hear Klingon speaking in English to humans or do you hear them speaking English to each other? Because, like, they'll probably start speaking English when they communicate.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You know, I think, you know, in the past, if we were to go back and watch, I'm going to turn out to be completely wrong. But in my memory, even in moments when it's a fully Klingon environment, whether it was on the homeworld or in a Klingon ship, nevertheless, you have the actors portraying these Klingons speaking English with what's, you know, pretends to be a Klingon accent, right?
Yeah.
But it's nevertheless English. So I just thought it was a very interesting choice we're still not getting that, you know?
Yeah.
And I found it kind of gratifying that they went that way, and I wonder if they're going to continue, because I think it would feel weird now to actually hear them speaking English.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to switch it. I think they made a creative choice, and they're going to stick with it, and I think that's pretty progressive, you know, not to give them too much credit, but I think that's a really, I appreciate that choice, that decision they made.
I think it's one of those, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, on the podcast last week, you were talking about, like, some of the Klingon language wasn't subtitled. And I noticed a comment on our Facebook post about it, about how it is subtitled, and so they weren't sure what you were referencing in your comment. And I remember thinking that, too, that I didn't, after you had said that, I wasn't sure what you meant.
Not all of it was subtitled, and I don't know if this was purely maybe in the first step, but there was a bulk of our initial meetings with the Klingons where they're speaking in Klingonese, but there were no subtitles.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay. Yep.
And I think, someone, you know, posted at Ebony Astor and said that they didn't have that experience when watching the show, that she had subtitles throughout. And so I actually wonder if, you know, but she's in the UK. So I wondered if it aired differently there, you know, like if different choices were made, distributor, based on distribution. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back, check the first episode, but I know in that very first episode when we meet them, there's no subtitles. And for many people watching, that helped them kind of reckon more with the alienness, in quotation marks, of the Klingons. But for other people, it was like, you know, no, this is just another way to kind of deny them, like, kind of full sentience, because because we don't speak their language, we don't know what they're saying, because these sounds are so completely unfamiliar to us, it was almost a way of denying them language, you know, because we were denying them meaning. We'll see what happens. But I do think, like, what was gratifying to me in this episode is that there appears to be more thought going into the Klingons than I initially assumed.
For sure. Okay, so, let's get on to Discovery and discuss what's happening on that ship, because there's some interesting things happening this episode.
Fucking space bears, tardigrades. I was so excited. Giant space bears. I'm into it. Sign me up.
It's good. Well, okay, so here's the situation. Lucius gets this distress call from an admiral saying that there is a planet that is under attack because they are the planet that processes dilithium crystals, which is what is needed for their warp engines. So obviously the Klingons want to improve their technology by stealing dilithium, blah, 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 blah. You know, our captain bullshit is like, we have to do the thing. We have to make this technology that we developed and that just, like, literally killed a bunch of people work.
Right.
And so
that actually was a funny moment. That was the only time when I did not hate Lieutenant Stamets, Alan Tudyk's doppelganger. When the captain was like, oh yeah, I absolutely have no doubt that we could do this. Cut to Stamets being like, there's no way, Captain.
Yeah, that was a good moment. And I thought it set up both of those characters really well. And I was actually really surprised because Paul, I actually didn't hate him this episode.
I didn't.
And I think that part of it is that they're setting up, for me at least, what's happening here is that, like, I'm hating Malfoy more and more. Like, he is just a piece of work, right? Like, he's everything that I despise in terms of, like, leadership and, you know, he's got some choice lines in this episode about
his best line for me was when he said, "I study war, and this is where I come to hone my craft."
That's the one that I was remembering. I was sitting there rolling, my eyes rolled so far back into my head.
Seriously,
what the hell?
I study war.
So you have this combination of two things happening in this episode. You have Paul trying to figure out how to warp in an hour. And or not warp, sorry, how to use spores to
flip, whatever they called it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Burnham, who is assigned to this monster to like alien monster bear thing to weaponize it. So I thought this whole bullshit of like, you've got to figure out how to do the science thing that is impossible within 8 hours or all these people are going to die. And when he played that recording to the entire crew, I lost my shit. Yeah. I was like, you're such a piece of shit. Like, you're such a horrible dude, right?
Yeah, like, so manipulative. And yeah, I get why he did it, but good work traumatizing the entire crew. Because if this doesn't work, you've just completely fucked with these people.
Yeah, and, like, he's not a nice leader. Like, he's not, he's just, you know, they say collision is, at the beginning, they're running a battle test, right? And they're saying collision is imminent, and he says collision is not an option, right? Like, he's not understanding or caring. And I know we disagree about Voyager, but the thing about Janeway that I really liked is that she was able to be a leader while also caring for her crew, right? And understanding that they are, like, out in space and they have there's an emotional tax to what they're doing, where he's the total opposite, right? He says Discovery's not a science ship anymore, it's a warship, right? You know, like, fuck him, man.
I watched this episode with my partner, and I was telling him that one of the things that I'm left with so far at the end of each episode is just this sense that I don't know who the crew is, and I think in a very real way, the crew apart from Lorca, is kind of unimportant to Lorca, except as they are tools to further this grand design of his. But there's really no sense that, like, this is a family, that these people are connected in any way, that this is anything other than a job. It's not, you know, the place where they live their lives and, you know, they have relationships. So we don't get to know very many of them. We're slowly starting to get to know more. But right now, the person that we're spending the most time with, apart from Burnham, is Captain Lorca. And I think, you know, that mirrors kind of his lone wolf understanding of who he is. It would not surprise me to learn that he doesn't know 90% of his crew's name,
yeah,
let alone us as an audience, you know? Yeah. Because I think, you know, in the way that, like, Kirk and Picard and Janeway, and Sisko, like, all of them, you know, Archer, you know, really...
We do not acknowledge Enterprise. No.
Too late. I've already said it.
No. I'm editing it out.
but I just, you know, there was a respect that they had for their crews that I don't know that we're going to see Lorca demonstrating. Because again, I think he sees himself as this lone wolf character.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's disappointing for me because that's kind of not what I come to Star Trek for. I come for, like, you know, teamwork making the dream work.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so, and they're also, like, being very, very obvious about comparing Lorca and Burnham mm-hmm. through the line where Saru was like, I was going to question your place on the crew.
Yeah.
I was wrong to question your place on the crew. You fit perfectly with Captain Lorca. And I was like, mm-hmm. my notes literally say, burn.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was this brutal moment where Saru's like, I'm not down with you. Like, yeah, I said I respected you. But, I mean, I said that I think you're a great soldier or like a great commander and smart. But I don't
fucking
like
you. Yeah, like you're a valuable asset. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And like they did not compromise that at all in the episode and they doubled down on it. And I think that that's really interesting because Saru is the only other member of the crew that we feel like we have any understanding of. We have any insight into how he behaves and what he thinks. And like watching Burnham manipulate him was kind of rough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Saru continues to be my favorite character week on week. Doug Jones, give it up every week. For Doug Jones, but for me, there's this kind of tension in the show because I feel like there is this real progressive impulse that's constantly being pulled back by this more kind of reactionary tendency. But I think occasionally that progressive voice does slip through, right? And it's through characters like Saru, it's through, you know, Burnham's occasional moments when she says things like, you know, biology is not destiny, you know, just because you want to use this thing as a weapon doesn't mean that's what it was created for or that's what it knows itself to be. So there are moments when we do find refuge, like, and we do find some, you know, our own thoughts being echoed by these characters.
Yeah.
But then, you know, like the CBS voice constantly pulls it back and it Absolutely. Becomes yay war again.
And I do think that Burnham is that in this episode. I think that I really liked her and Ripper, the alien beast creature. I thought that Commander Security was, like, it was so, I never liked her character to begin with, and I feel like she's just, you know, I'm here to keep you in line. Who gives a fuck about your creativity? War, weaponize. So you have her, you have them having this tension where Burnham is like, but it's a creature that we know nothing about. Like, how dare, like, why are we jumping to these conclusions? That's not what we're about. Like, that's not what Starfleet is about. And then you're like, she gets out the fucking sword and the she's going to sedate it. And then gets attacked and then she's dead. She's fucking died. I was like, well,
this
can't
show
have
is
too
ruthless.
Many. Yeah. I was like, can't have too many people of color. That would be a problem. Got to kill them
off.
Oh, no,
but we traded. Because remember, we got to see some more bridge crew that never get introduced. And there was another black woman on the bridge crew who had fabulous hair.
By the way,
Burnham's hair looked great this episode. I'm loving it. Everyone keeping track. You can put a gold star by this week. Her hair still looks great.
Perfect. I'm so glad. I did notice the woman, the black woman on the bridge crew, and you're like, can she be a character? Can she, like, do something?
I'm hoping that she is, as opposed to, like, that random-ass white dude back at the communication station. I was like, no one cares about you, Chris Pratt Jr. Like, yeah. I don't care if we ever learn your name. Like, you're boring. You're basic.
And what about the woman that was on the original crew that has the little metal thing for an eyebrow that, like, is just there? We don't know anything about her.
Seriously. Like, and I know that that woman is happy to collect a check week on week. But if I were her, I'd be like, am I ever going to have a line? Am I ever going to do something other than kind of vaguely react when the ship tilts to the left or to the right? I would like to know who she is. She looks a little bit like Natalie Dormer. I'm into it.
Exactly. I'm just like, oh, they're probably going to do nothing with her either. Or she'll have, like, one of those weird one-off episodes that Geordi always had that were the worst episodes ever. Because he was, like, the most misogynist creep. Whenever there was an episode about Geordi, he was a misogynist creep. You got to go back.
We can go into this. Yeah. Because they always set him up as, like, the nice guy in capital letters, right? And that was fucked up. But, man, we'll get into it later episodes.
All right. So one of the things that I liked what they were doing with Ripper. I like that Burnham was like, let's turn this creature into a supercomputer. How brilliant, right? And you have you have this exchange between Burnham and Paul that I thought was kind of cute and like is, you know, Paul, I'm being endeared to Paul a little bit because he's like I feel bad for him. Like, he's in this impossible situation with this warmongering captain. He's like, I literally did not sign up for this. Like, I want to do this right. And so I think that there's, like, an allyship that him and Burnham are finding in their mutual, like, let's maybe try to respect things a little bit. So they're about to walk in and test out whether, not test out with this, they're about to walk in to the creature's den. And Burnham says, the phaser will only piss it off. And Paul says, think of it as a placebo for my skepticism. And it was just this really, like, it was just cute. Like, it was not a shitty line. Like, there's so much shitty dialogue. And it was just kind of humanizing. It was humanizing for me in terms of this guy that's really annoying.
And then did you love it when he talked about how he wanted to talk to his mushrooms? Whatever. Oh! I still hate that character.
I do too, but that was cute.
People listening to the podcast, you can't see, but I'm giving two big thumbs up. That guy still irritates me.
You mean thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Oh, my God. Edit that out.
Yeah. It's all good. So the other thing that I thought was an interesting place to go is that, like, Ripper's clearly in pain, right? Like, super successful, fascinating that they're able to tap into this creature's brain to, like, map out the entire star system, but also not doing well. And, like, the preview for the next episode alludes to that as well. And so there's clearly going to be tension about how much they can use the creature and, like, what is it abuse at some point, like, which it's starting to seem like it is, right?
I mean, if Doctor Who came into this, he would not be happy with what they're doing to that space bear. He wasn't happy when the human race fucked up with that space whale, and he would definitely have some words for us, which would be great, because Captain Lorca needs to hear those words.
I'm so excited also, when we can say, when Doctor Who, when she's gonna have some words for us.
Oh, man, I can't wait for people to listen to my half-baked podcast on Doctor Who. I was wondering, like, how they were going to deal with the fact that obviously the use of the enslavement, because that's what it is, you know, the exploitation and abuse and enslavement of the tardigrade for this purpose, like, how they were going to deal with the fact that that technology is something that the Federation loses after a certain point. So obviously it either can't keep working or we have to have some sort of, like, you know, crisis of, you know, morality and let the creature go or whatever. But it's not something that they can use forever throughout the series because it doesn't show up any other time.
I
think we can look forward to, you know, either Burnham, you know, performing like a prison break with the space bear or the space bear, please don't let it die because I'm in love with Ripper. But something's got to happen. Yeah. And then,
Can we talk about, or not talk about, but at least acknowledge how fucking stupid it was when they saved the planet and the little kid went, who saved us?
Oh, God. That's all we need to say about that, because that was garbage.
Oh, my God.
That was basura. That was terrible.
It was so
I'll tell you what I want to talk about, though. Mm. Wilson Cruz is aging very well.
Who?
Wilson Cruz, the medical officer. He was in My So-Called Life. Oh, he looks great. Unfortunately, seeing how he aged reminded me that I'm aging, so it was bittersweet, but he looks great. I'm glad he got added to the crew. Also, I'm glad because he was giving Stamets the business, your friend Paul, and I was like, yeah, just give that guy the gas face. He deserves nothing. Don't give him quality medical care.
Yeah, no.
Give him a hypo spray and send him on his way.
I'm just saying, like, if we have to do this podcast every week, like, having some things that I am enjoying and didn't hate is a plus. So, like, Paul's still annoying, pretentious. Like, I actually wrote in my notes.
Clearly you like him. You're calling him by his first name now. I refuse. Whatever. I refuse, no matter how long this podcast goes on.
In my notes, the first conversation he had with Lucius, I said, Paul is totally insufferable. And then as the episode went on, I think that they, like, did some work to, or for me at least, like, the more I hated Malfoy, the more I liked Paul. Like, they set up the dichotomy so that you had to choose a side on this, right, in some way, so...
Well, yeah. I mean, and he's going to be, you know, an openly gay character on the series, which I applaud that. I just wish he wasn't insufferable.
He's
and
totally insufferable.
I didn't hate him, whatever.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the Klingons? Because I want to talk about the end with mention of the matriarchs.
Yes.
And what that's going to turn into.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued by that. You know, like, I'm not sure what it's going to be. I'm not sure what it portends for our understanding of the Klingons and Klingon social structure, but I am into it. So they better not take too long getting into it
and
in subsequent episodes.
And what does sacrifice everything mean?
It means he has to give up being a shithead dude, you
does
know?
It?
Because the women are going to show him the way, and that's why I was like, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm down with that.
Yeah, exactly. So, like I said, progressive voices, they keep trying to pop up.
They do. So we will see. We will be back next week with another episode of our hot takes. Yay. You can talk to Ebony all you want at Ebony Astor. You can also send us messages at FemFreak on Twitter. You can comment on our Facebook page. We'd love to know what you're thinking about what we're talking about, what you think about the show. You know, just that normal thing that normal people do online where they, like, leave feedback and have discussions that we've never been capable of doing. So, yeah.
Exactly.
And if you are interested, you're watching Halt and Catch Fire, Carolyn and I are wrapping up the last season on our podcast.
And Anita is so emotional. So she needs someone to go through this with her.
There's a lot of crying.
This incredibly
happening.
Emotional moment.
And yeah, check out our website, feministfrequency.com, for all of the reactions to all of the things for videos and podcasts and articles. Last thing I'll say is that I set up an RSS feed for this, so I will post the RSS feed, and then hopefully we'll get this in the iTunes store and all of that so you can subscribe to it and have it in normal podcast fashion. So thank you for joining us for another week of the Star Trek Discovery Recap Podcast.
Hey, I didn't do a theme song.
Oh,
this
do
week.
One. Do one.
Star Trek, you're doing better. I'm gonna let you cook for one more episode. Yeah. I'm done.
Bye.
Bye.